Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thank you very much for tuning into this week's episode of Ball Bags Podcast. It is final episode in the season, and as per usual, it's myself and the Chief. How are you, sir?
Very good, Sasquatch. How are you?
I am very good. Slightly sad to be ending the series, the season. We're taking a brief step back. I'll be back in the autumn, hopefully with a more consistent lineup. That it doesn't rely on two blokes being free every Thursday evening, which, look, life and work sometimes gets in the way of all that. But without much further ado, we know the schedule. It hasn't changed. So, Chief, who's your player of the week and why?
Player of the week, very biased, Jack Crowley. He was a bright spark in a otherwise dull Munster performance. Scored his first try for Munster at the weekend as well. So he'd some really nice touches, nice kicks out of hand and stuff. I just thought no disrespect to Joey Carby, just that spark that Munster lacked, certainly in the first half, and it shone through a little bit in that second half against a dogged Cardiff defence. So, yeah, he's my player of the week.
Cool. Not a bad one. Mine's also biased, and it was also another dull performance. I suppose, look, Arsenal-Man City the weekend was a game that probably let everyone down. But it let everyone down because defensively both sides were pretty exceptional. And then maybe it's one for the anoraks, but I just thought, given what was on the line, given the fact that it meant Arsenal got 8 points out of a possible 12 against the other two in the top three title race, I gave it to Gabriel. I thought he was slightly better than Saliba in the moment. And just, we've had, as an Arsenal fan, not just since 2004, sorry, not just since like City got big, but since 2004, it's been a long time where you've gone to the best side in the country and shut them down defensively and not had an absolute nightmare. And maybe romantically he got the nudge from me over anyone else. And I haven't always been his biggest fan. I always preferred to leave at the back, and I've kind of different times pushed for maybe a centre back pairing of Kiwar and Saliba. I do think he's a bit of a hothead, but I just thought on Sunday, credit where it's due, that was a pretty stupid performance. Happy.
Very good case. And, you know, kept Haaland very quiet, and not only that, Foden, and, you know, it's just solid performance. Like, defensively, Arsenal this year have just been, like, rock solid. Like, a couple of, like all teams this year, have had mistakes and stuff, at crucial times. But, like, I think they are the best defensively in the league, statistically.
Mm-hmm. Especially since Christmas.
I want to say I'm not going to concede, but given that a loss potentially would have put Arsenal out of the title race, I will concede.
And he wins it on the last. Wins it on the last.
Give you a season finale victory.
Excellent stuff. I'll take that. I will take that. Right, Chief. Agree to disagree. Hear me up.
So as we approach the business end of the season, and recently haven't had one, do we have too many international windows, Or is it a case they're timed wrong in the calendar?
Do we have too many international windows? Yeah, like the Nations Cup, Nations League, I think that needs to go. It has always seemed like a money grab from UEFA. So I'd get rid of that off the bat. I would make an argument that we probably don't have... I think we structure international windows the wrong way. I think we take international windows to play a series of friendlies. And it's further hampered by the fact of, since COVID, you've had a Euros, a World Cup, and then a Euros again. So it is kind of... I know you had a Winter World Cup as well, which it just throws into the whole fatigue element of it. But I think we're in standard years and kind of earlier in the years of major championship years, we take international breaks and play two friendlies and take international breaks and play two competitive fixtures. I'd divvy that up. I'd take an international break and play a friendly followed by a meaningful game. I think what hurts people is, a la this weekend, you had a top three matchup in what's shaping up to be the tightest title race we've had potentially ever, in that you've three sides that, look, I'm biased, but I still don't think Arsenal want to win it, but there's three sides that legitimately this stage can, with what's left, eight games once Liverpool play tonight. And the fact that we had to wait 2 weeks for that game while friendlies were being played kind of hampered it. And when you go to friendlies, you have instances like Saka, who pulled out and had a niggle. So what's the point? So that'd be kind of my major points on it, in that get the premise of it for qualification, but arguably it should be a friendly and a competitive fixture in each window, as opposed to these windows
where double friendly. I'd strongly agree with that, or at least be two competitive games. Two competitive games in a short window is probably a bit much. I think you're probably right. If you can tailor it around that it's a friendly first and competitive fixture second, that the guys that you want to keep fresh, you maybe play for the last half an hour of the friendly, or the first half hour, whip them off. And
but the reason I've gone friendly competitive fixture was, if you were just playing competitive fixture straight off the bat, I get the premise that it's very hard to build cohesion and to try new things and then to bring all your players from club land. Bear in mind, like the way club football is shaping up, especially for young Irish players in the future, you're going to have blokes in Italy, you're going to have blokes in France, you're not going to have as many blokes in England. So the chances of them getting back for international training camps mid-season, stuff
very
like that,
limited,
they're limited. Whereas you could potentially facilitate that, a la years ago when we were less of a joke internationally, and the best Irish players were playing
in the top teams in the Premier League and stuff. Yeah,
Brexit has unfortunately had a massive impact on international football, particularly in this country. Now look, it's harboured by the globalisation of the Premier League. Ipso facto, 100%. You can't argue that 2002, majority of players in the Premier League were from the home islands, the home nations, as such, as you used to be referred to. Now they're not. English players get priority because of rules and regulations around squad building. Scottish players less so, Welsh players less so, and at the bottom of the pile because of Brexit is Republic of Ireland international.
You'd wonder then, does that have a bearing, going completely off topic, does that have a bearing on players that in the north that have the ability to represent Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland? Do they then say, I'm going to represent Northern Ireland? Now, maybe it doesn't, because of the passport thing, that they can have dual, but, do you know?
I don't know enough about it, but given the family background and the second sport he played as a young fella, And maybe those days are gone, not from up the north. But I would look
at that's Bradley, who I'm thinking, Connor Bradley, yeah.
Imagine potentially that may be the reason why that decision was made. And you see it, like, you do see it now with all these young Irish players. Mm. They're all going to Italy and France now. And it's like, well, this never happened before. And part of me was thinking, are we producing a golden crop? But
it's the lack of opportunity in the UK because of Brexit. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're relatively cheap options, weren't an option. What a punt anyway.
I just think some of the, like, this most recent window definitely had a huge bearing on, like, the delay in getting those top fixtures, but also for international managers themselves, players pull out of those squads because they're nothing friendlies. It's like they don't need the appearance fees because they get paid enough.
Especially if you're a star who's guaranteed to be in that World Cup, European Championship squad. Like, I get it if you're a fringe player. Mm-hmm. Will I, won't I miss out?
Yeah.
That player is going to go and play, obviously. But by logic, then you're kind of missing out on the best potential players for fans to watch. I think it's the fans that suffer more than anyone.
Ultimately, the fans internationally suffer. And then if your best players are then getting injured on international duty, club fans suffer. So it's a vicious cycle. Like, and I just think, the timing of it, to me, sometimes they're just timed so poorly. It's like everyone wants to get their holidays at the end of the season too, especially the teams that aren't involved in European Championships, World Cups, whatever. So, like, end of season friendlies, it happens in other sports as well. You know, is there enough incentive there for it to do it? Lads pull out of those as well. So you end up with nothing squads in those friendlies as well. So it's probably, you know, maybe the Super League will have a dictation on the outcome of international windows if that comes to fruition. So
look, it's effectively multiple moving parts. Like, and look, I know we hone in on the UK specifically, but you look at it and go, do we really need a Carabao Cup?
Yeah.
Or whatever it's called now. Like, there is, like, the reason the FA Cup has become so devalued is the money attached to it now. But if you didn't have the Carabao Cup, there's less opportunities for up-and-coming players to play. So FA Cup is your bread and butter. So you at least get, you mightn't get the quality, but you get the want to be there. If that makes sense. That's what I would say. I would say, if I was in charge of the domestic game in the UK in the morning, I would just get rid of the
Carabao. Remove Premier League teams from it. Leave it for Championship down. Yeah.
Yeah. Championship and below. Gives them all a
potentially
chance
to finish, and keep that European space potentially for a championship, maybe. Maybe not. That'd be a step too far for them.
Yeah. Look, maybe you could incentivize them by giving it as a, I don't think they've the right to dictate what that is, but
yeah,
the Conference League definitely.
A place in that, it'd get them, you know. Yeah. Like, I suppose probably it's with the already extra fixtures that are in Championship and stuff, like, there's 8 extra fixtures compared to Premier League, so that probably wouldn't work. Yeah.
Longer season, though. Longer season. Look. Potentially. Moving on to the Oval Ball, I suppose. I kind of was hoping I'd get roughly under the collar, but I don't actually think this will. But look, Munster have announced, obviously, that veteran scrum half Conor Murray has signed a contract extension with Munster and the IFU, again on a central contract. Given his age and his performances over the last 18 months. I personally would be hypercritical of internationally his performances the last 18 months at a minimum, potentially longer. Is this a wise decision? And then I suppose the second part of this is, overall, do we need a restructure of the contract?
So I'll tackle the first part and wholeheartedly agree that his form has been iffy, to say the least. He's had moments in green where, you know, last the Grand Slam of 23, where he was good when he came on to replace Gibson Park. He had some good moments in the World Cup as well. Quarterfinal aside, you know, probably like Johnny, a game too far probably for his body in that he's 35, as you say, or like I think 36 this year, is he? His form for Munster has been far worse. And as a result, like his performance against Exeter in the Heineken Cup has resulted in Munster going away to Northampton this weekend. In saying that, the injury profile at Munster at scrum half, Paddy Patterson is recovering from an ACL injury. It's good business for Munster, especially if it's funded by the IRFU. And he is an Andy Farrell player. So that is the big thing. I think potentially if Patterson wasn't injured, there's a couple of good young lads coming through the academy there at Munster as well. I think he may have moved on, maybe a year in France, something like that. I know he has other interests outside the game and stuff like that, and his wife is, you know, they're kind of influencers now as such as well, outside of rugby and stuff.
Yeah. Look when you're good.
So I think I feel that Munster wouldn't have offered him a straight contract if he came off central. It may be a hybrid, but it makes sense for Munster to hang on to him for 12 months, considering that, you know, a great guy to have. Like, he's Ireland's best scrum half, you know, undoubtedly. I would say that. And like Stringer was there, and you know, big fan of Stringer back in the day, but like his caps, his performances for Ireland and the Lions, he is Ireland's best scrum half in my opinion. So to keep that experience around Craig Casey, develop him, but the Ireland side of it means it's a stumbling block for Casey, that he's not going to get game time. So with this upcoming South Africa tour, Murray is more than likely going to be the bench guy, I think, unless he's injured. You know, which doesn't help us in our rebuild. I know we don't need, like, you know, throw the grenade in and, you know, a total reset, but we do need to start looking at depth players and, you know, introducing different options. I suppose on the other point, I feel there needs to be a restructure of the central contract situation. That central contract potentially should have went to someone like Dan Sheehan or Jack Crowley. That players that are going to be long-term, you know, barring injury, long-term members of the national team. So it's like, and maybe even do away with central contracts or something altogether, because when you look how heavily stacked Leinster are with central contracts, and that's just it's production. Yeah, it's
production.
It's not sure the right word, but it's almost a problem for their success. They've been so successful that I say, well, these guys deserve it because they're so important to the national team and stuff like that. Potentially now, like Anton Frisch, a player we've spoken about in the last few weeks, he's declared he wants to play for France. So he was a player that was brought in on it's a PONI deal, player of national interest. he's someone that's going to be going off books either at the end of his contract or potentially earlier. Those contracts are probably a better option, like 2 years, and bump them up a little bit. So where the IRFU, if they're more important to the national team, the IRFU take on more of a percentage of their wages or whatever. So, but I think Humphreys, David Humphreys, when he comes in at the end of the season, he has, that's probably the biggest one he needs to tackle, is the central contract situation.
Yeah, like, I suppose I'll stop that timer, it's about to go. On my end, it's something I'm very interested in. Not necessarily sure I know the answer, but it almost seems to me as if the central contracts almost come with a pressure that we've made the decision to give him a central contract for the year. Yeah. Regardless of form, we kind of have to include him in the Six Nations squads to get our value out of it. Whereas, like, there's all sorts of, this sounds quite illegal, it's not, there's all sorts of manipulation techniques other codes use around salary caps. And I get salary caps primarily are there as a function of stopping sides from going bust, basically. In the bigger sports like the NFL, the NBA is a soft cap, it's not the same as Major League Baseball. But in the other sports, there's an element too of keeping it competitive, especially when you've no promotion or relegation.
Yeah.
Try and make it viable that a team can compete. But we could, if you had players, say, Conor Murray, using an example, don't want to be picking on him, but say, for example, you know, Conor Murray doesn't want to leave Munster. He has business ventures in the way, but he wants to play out his career in Munster. There potentially should be an option. There's nothing to say you can't select the player because they're not an essential contract for Ireland. So, but you could do a former international contract. And I just often think of Sean O'Brien when he had to go to London Irish and stuff like that. But that doesn't even need to be coming out of the IRFU's pocket as such. What they could do is they could offer, we'll bump him up.
Yeah.
Say we'll take 40% of the salary. We'll bump it up to 40%, and you repay that to us over 5 years. Like, there's all sorts of manipulations to keep player, club happy, and then avoid the situations we're having. Look, it seems like Munster have been mostly ill-affected with Snyman and now potentially Frisch. And that way it can be done. The Snyman is a... Look, it's because Klein wasn't good enough to play for Ireland, but all of a sudden it's good enough to play for South Africa. Arguments to be made there. But I think the IRFU might need to get a bit more strategic, especially seeing as they don't have a situation like they do in England where the clubs own the player and the clubs aren't going to relinquish that because they know what happens when we've had a tradition of IRFU central contracting. Yeah. Provinces love it, to be fair to them. It works well. It's the reason why we've improved over the last 20 years, if I'm brutally honest. I kind of think...
Yeah. The central contracts definitely help, like, the overall budget of the squads. You know, like, so if... I think it's 9 central contracts are in Leinster. That's, like, 9 of your top 15 players, like, your top starters are on central contracts, fully funded by the IRFU. If Wales were to have the same situation at the Scarlets, or, do you know, like, it would almost be seen as potentially financial doping a little bit. Do you know, everyone is contracted to the IRFU anyway, as far as I know, with the provinces and stuff, even if they're not centrally contracted. To go back to your point, the central contract, there is so much pressure to select that person for a squad, regardless of form. Do you know, it's like when Stockdale was injured and he was coming off the end of his central contract, he was being selected, and it's like, but his form didn't warrant it, whereas someone like Andrew Conway, or, you know, even like a Tiernan O'Halloran or someone at Connacht, like, that would fly it in European games, in URC games. It's like, just bring them in and have a chance, like, see what they can do and stuff. And ultimately, I think that's an issue as well. With the national selection, it's very Dublin centric in terms of, oh, you're close to training facilities, you're closer than Belfast, Limerick, and Galway, so we'll call up next man from Leinster. Like, it's and not necessarily the next best person. You know, it's like Keane Prendergast, because he's in Galway, he hasn't probably been in camp as much as, you know, maybe like if Will Connors hadn't been injured or something like that. It's just, you know, like, it's, yeah, I just think there is that huge pressure of the having to select them just because they're centrally contracted. And there's also the issue then, like, if O'Mahony stays, is that going to be a central contract? Because if he's still required, like, as seen by Farrell as an important cog for Ireland, and he's still your captain, well, then he'd be the first captain in since central contracts have become active not to have gotten one. So, you know, it's still up in the air. He may decide to retire at the end of this season. It's been lingering on since the World Cup, you know. So it's these distractions that you don't need as well, especially for your captain.
Yeah, and then look, as I said, it is, as you touched on briefly, Conor Murray being extended is very disheartening for
Casey.
How is his name? Young from half of Munster.
Yeah.
Like, that's very, and look, he's professional, he'll have to get on with it. But you could forgive him for saying, I'm never going to get a fair crack at this.
Yeah. Like, and I'm
outperforming this.
He's the nailed on nine, like starting nine for Munster. And you know, and has been probably since Christmas of 22, like the Christmas, January 22-23 season. He's been nailed on, like, and. Mm. It's like Gibson Park is what, 31, I think. If he, like, Gibson Park is quite fit, like, stays injury free, he could be like Murray and play 35-36, and then that brings Casey up to 31 in age, you know. It's like, but what young scrum halves have then come on the scene to potentially bypass him and stuff, you know. And I suppose the likes of Nathan Doak, who, you know, there looked to be a potential there, get Ireland. I think there's talk of him being repositioned to 10 for Ulster. You know, so it's like that's his nine shout gun, like, for, and realistically, the ten depth chart, it's Crowley, the two Burns, Prendergast. Then Nathan Doak probably, you know, or, you know, potentially, like, Jack Carty's out of the question, Billy Burns out of the question, you know. So maybe the young lads coming through, Tony Butler, I think, of Munster. Good young player coming through as well. Like, but it's just all those little things, it you know, it's knock on effect for it, everything. So
we could burn the midnight
passionate oil,
I think, on this one. I think it's something we're both fairly not agree,
no, definitely,
but like interested and kind of passionate about, and I think there may be a better way of doing things. But Chief, I think, you know, for one last time this season.
So this is an absolute classic, and was a couple of weeks ago in the FA Cup match. It's United v Liverpool on Sunday, 3:30 kickoff, and United potentially able to put a boot into Liverpool and keep the title race going, make it more competitive, if that's possible. Just what can I say? It's a classic fixture. You know, United aren't always on form, but when it comes to Liverpool, anything can happen.
Yeah. Oh, look, we've seen it in the FA Cup fixture on Paddy's Day. What a game that was. Didn't think it was going to be that good. Yeah, look, it's obviously...
Yeah.
Every Liverpool fixture, every City fixture, I'm shouting for the opposition between here and May.
Yeah.
Even if we fall off, still we're on it. And it's the hope that kills you at the end of the day, Chief. And look, skipping ahead, my most watched TV this week is, it's a bit of a classic fixture, to be honest with you again, but Leinster-Leicester, Saturday the 6th, 8 o'clock kick-off. It's in the Aviva, it's on TNT Sports. What more do you need? Quarterfinal of the...
This I think this has the potential to be an absolute classic. I think Leicester would have been very disappointed with how the fixture went last year. And I think they've improved massively from that. And I think if Keenan is still out and Larmour starts at 15, I expect some aerial bombs to be dropped on him.
Yeah, especially given his performance.
He beat seven defenders for minus two meters.
Few errors.
Yeah.
It was more the drop ball. Someone caught it and threw it back and Cole dropped it under the posts. Gives Scotland a scrum. I think they actually scored a try.
In fairness, he came in cold into that one. He wasn't expected.
Look, yeah.
Yeah. I can't excuse him.
Junior rugby.
Yeah, cracking game. I think we've gone for two cracking fixtures.
Yeah, it's a cracking weekend of sport, and I don't think we're going to see much of it. To his on stag.
And that's all from me.
But look, that's all from me. For one last time this season, thank you. And good night.